Hijacked, A Beechwood Adventure by G. Michael Smith. Chapter 9. Everybody Gets a Peek. The next morning, Billy hoed and wheeled. It was surprisingly painless because his thoughts were running wild. He was trying to make sense of everything he had discovered at the old Cooper place. The secret passage from the cellar of the house to a bricked-up underground passage, the skeleton buried in the backyard, and the platform in the cedar tree. It all kept running around in his head. They must be connected in some way. He felt for the brass belt buckle in his pocket. He took it out and looked at it more carefully. It was a curved, rectangular piece of brass. On both sides were stripes of detail pressed into the surface. There were 10 stripes in all, 5 on each side. The stripes were offset from each other so that a blank on one side contained some detail pushed through from the other side. In the middle of the top and bottom edges was a small hole. On the sides were sections where the belt might pass through. These seemed to have worn very thin, and the leather that used to attach to them must have long since rotted away. Billy looked at the holes at the top and bottom of the belt buckle, and remembered the day he fell into the grave. He could clearly see the buckle spinning in the air. Dropping the hoe, he ran around the tent, covering the grave towards the shed. He searched the workbench for something small and sharp that would fit into the tiny hole on the bottom of the buckle. On the bench he found a tin can filled with rusty finishing nails. He took one and inserted it up into the hole on the buckle. Holding onto the nail, he gave the buckle a flip with his finger. It spun around. He flipped it again, and the buckle spun around a dozen times. Flipping it a third time, he watched closely as both sides blended together, forming a single, clear image. With continuous flips, he was able to see a whole picture that included what looked like the Cooper house, the shed he was standing in, and what seemed to be a rocky outcrop on the side opposite the house. These three items were connected with a wiggly line. Billy spun the buckle again to confirm the image. The wiggly line must be the tunnel that starts at the cellar of the house and leads to the shed, he thought. It was a map that someone, at some time, wanted to keep secret. The bricked-up wall must have been constructed to stop anyone from entering the house through the tunnel. Billy walked to the section of floor in the shed that seemed to be hollow and jumped up and down. He listened to the echo. He inspected the floor again. There was no obvious entrance. Perhaps the person who had built the brick wall had also boarded up the floor of the shed. Billy left the shed with the buckle and the finishing nail tucked away in his pocket. He walked over to the cedar tree and looked out to the freeway. It was mid-morning and the traffic was light. Between the two sides of the freeway was a copse of fir trees surrounding a rocky outcrop that reached at least 5 meters higher than the surface of the road. Remembering the image on the spinning belt buckle, he realized it was a map of a tunnel that led from the Cooper place to the rocky outcrop in the middle of the freeway. He figured the tunnel must be very old and probably did not exist anymore, for the map was made before the freeway. The road builders had probably destroyed it. Unless the freeway was uphill from his present location. Maybe the tunnel was still there. Maybe it went right under the freeway and up to the top of the rocky hill on the median between the west and the eastbound lanes. Billy felt a rush of goosebumps dance up and down his spine. If he couldn't get into the tunnel from this side, Maybe he could find an opening on the median between the freeway lines. Crossing the freeway during the day was impossible. The traffic was crazy. Someone might be able to cross at night, though very late at night. He forced his thoughts to settle and walked back to the shed where he had left the hoe and the wheelbarrow. Just as he approached, he heard a psst from above. He did not look up. He whispered back, "Jackie, is that you?"
"Of course it's me," replied Jackie. "Is the coast clear? I have to see this treehouse, a.k.a. secret hideout."
Billy dropped the hoe again. "Let me check," he said, and he walked toward the house. He climbed the back steps and listened. The motor in his father's new screw gun hummed and stopped and then hummed again. He stepped off the porch and ran back to the shed. "If he comes out, you gotta hide, or you'll give away the secret maple tree passage. Once you're on the roof, climb down the pallets on the back wall."
"Okay," said Jackie.
Billy noticed that the large branch of the maple tree was bent much closer to the roof of the shed than usual when Jackie made his surprise visits. Jackie hopped off the branch.
"I guess this is a good time to tell you that the rest of the gang is here, too. I couldn't keep them away."
Soon the whole gang was standing on the roof of the shed and staring down at Billy. Billy kept glancing at the house. There was nothing to do but make the best of what appeared to be a very bad situation.
"Okay, but if my dad comes out and sees you all, you have to tell him that you all decided to take a walk to see where I was working, or it's goodbye to the secret passage and goodbye secret hideout. Is everyone clear?"
Jackie opened his mouth in protest.
"My way, Jackie," Billy said.
"Okay, okay," he said, and turned to the whole gang standing behind him. "I will do the talking if we get caught. You guys just nod your heads like you agree with whatever I say. Got it?"
Everyone nodded their heads in agreement. They all followed Jackie to the edge of the roof and climbed down the leaning pallets.
When everyone was assembled, Billy pointed at the cedar tree.
"See that old stump behind the tree?" he asked, and waited for them all to acknowledge what he was pointing at.
"On my signal, you're going to run one at a time to that stump and hide behind it. Look at the cleats on the cedar tree and follow them until you see the platform. Then peek out at me, quickly wave, and wait for me to signal you to come back. No dawdling. When I do this," he pointed two fingers at them as if it were a pretend gun, "you will run straight back here. Questions?"
"How long can we look?" asked Binky.
Billy rolled his eyes. "You can look to a count of 10.
"Can I count out loud?"
Jackie butted in.
"No, Anthony, you have to count in your head. If you cannot count as far as 10, then count to 5 twice."
Binky nodded. "Jackie, you're first." Billy stepped out far enough to see the back porch and then pointed his fingers at Jackie. Jackie ran straight to the stump and disappeared. Everyone was staring at the stump. Billy looked down at Binky. His mouth was moving as he counted silently to 10. When he got to 10, he reached up and pulled on Billy's sleeve and said,
"It's past 10. I got to 13.
"Don't worry, Binky. He just counts a little slower than you, that's all." This seemed to satisfy him. When Billy looked back at the stump, he could see Jackie's hand waving. He glanced over at the house and, seeing the coast was clear, pointed his fingers at Jackie. Jackie sprinted back to the shed. He was excited.
"This is going to be the best secret hideout ever."
His excitement was contagious, and everyone wanted to go next. Billy tapped Charming on the shoulder, and off he sprinted. He chose Binky next.
Binky beamed at not being chosen last and dashed off to the stump. They all followed one at a time. The last to go was Orf. She didn't seem to mind. She dashed over to the old stump. Everyone had stopped counting to 10 except Binky. Orf must be a slow counter, 'cause I'm already at 20, he said. They all waited and stared at the stump. Suddenly Petra pointed and burst out, "Look, she's up there!" Everyone's eyes followed her finger. They could see Orf waving from 3 meters up the tree. Orf's head was peeking out from behind the trunk. Suddenly she ducked back and disappeared. A few seconds later, she was running from behind the stump before Billy could signal that all was safe. She dashed up to them with panic in her eyes. She whispered loudly, the cops are coming! Someone call the cops! They just drove into the driveway. There's a white van behind it. We have to get out of here!" There was a look of panic in Billy's eyes. "They've come for the body." Orf's mouth fell open. "There's a body?" Billy could hear the car tires on the gravel. He glanced out from behind the shed. His friends had not seen the police tape or the tent that was set up in the front of the shed. "Follow me and don't talk. I'll explain later." He quickly led them single file to the shed door and pointed inside. "Go under the bench and cover yourselves with that old green tarp. Hurry! Don't come out until I come and get you, and be quiet!" He had just closed the door and picked up the hoe when his father called from the porch. "William, the police have brought the people from the university. They're going to take the body away today." The police returned to their vehicle. The white van came and parked right beside the tent. Billy stood leaning on his hoe, watching them. They nodded at him and entered the tent. A few minutes later, a woman came out and walked over to Billy. "I understand you found the grave. I'm really glad you called it in."
"My dad called the police, and I think they called you."
"However it happened, I'm glad we have this chance to document some of the history of this place. Old bones often help."
"How long will it take for you guys to dig him up?"
"Oh, we're not going to dig him up today. We're just going to spend a half hour or so figuring out what we need to get the job done. We will be back on Monday."
Billy nodded and watched. His insides were swirling. He prayed his friends could stay quiet for that long. He stood and watched as the university people carried recording equipment into the tent. Camera flashes lit up the canvas. It didn't take as long as they said. Soon they were loading the cameras back into the van and preparing to leave. The woman approached Billy.
"We will be here at 8 sharp on Monday morning. Please keep an eye on this site while you're here. We don't want anyone messing with our research."
She smiled and got back into the van and drove away. Billy started to hoe the garden again to make it look like everything was normal. As soon as the van was out of sight, he dropped the hoe and ran back to the shed. Billy opened the door of the shed and whispered,
"All clear! You guys can come out now!"
Sharma was the first to come out from under the tarp. He was holding his nose.
"Thank all the Indian gods. Petra farted under the tarp, and I thought I was going to die."
Petra grinned.
"Girls don't fart. We pass pleasant-smelling wind. That's what my mom always says to my dad."
The rest of the gang were all waving their hands in front of their faces.
"You're disgusting," said Orf.
"Oh, and you've never farted," said Petra with disdain.
"Enough about farts. You guys have to get out of here before my dad hears you and comes to check out the noise. Climb back up onto the roof of the shed and disappear into the maple." He shooed them out the door and around the back of the shed. Once everyone was on the roof, he called out in a whisper, "Tomorrow at 9, in the tree. I will be last, and I want everyone already here. No latecomers." Everyone nodded and disappeared into the leaves. Chapter 10, Fort Building and New Discoveries. They started on Saturday morning, and by noon they had most of the pallet lumber ready. Everyone had brought a hand tool. They had hammers, crowbars, big and small, screwdrivers, and hatchets. All had been borrowed from various workbenches. The Braves sat down and ate their lunch and chatted about sleeping in their new hideout. Then came the hoist. This was Jackie's masterpiece. He had taken a set of clothesline pulleys his dad had removed when he got his mom a new dryer. From the two pulleys and some rope, he made what he called a treeler, short for tree wheeler. The top pulley was tied to a high tree branch. They could then attach things like pieces of lumber to the bottom pulley and pull down on the rope. According to Jackie, his system had a mechanical advantage of 2. He explained to everyone how his system cut the weight of the wood hauled up the tree by half, but they would have to pull twice as much rope. Charming was about to go into all the other possibilities if they had one more pulley, but Orff shut him down with, "Pull, don't talk." The afternoon was spent lifting the cleats up to Billy, who screwed them to the tree, attaching a large lag eye screw above each cleat for the safety clip on a rope tied to his belt. He had a rule for everyone who climbed the tree. They had to have 2 ropes about a meter long tied to their belt or around their waist, with a safety clip called a carabiner on the end of each rope. They could not go up without it. You had to clip on to the lag screw eye, step up on the next cleat, clip on the second eye with the second clip, and remove the previous one. Each step would involve the sequence: clip one on, step, clip two on, clip one off, step, clip one on, step, clip two off, and so on until you reached the platform. If you slipped, there would always be one of the clips attached to the tree. "Safety first," stressed Billy. "If one of us falls and gets hurt, our parents will stop us from spending the summer in the best secret hideout ever. I expect all of you to find a way to get yourselves equipped with rope and safety clips." Everyone nodded their head. "Good. Let's clean up. We can never leave stuff out around the yard or my dad will become suspicious. I'm going to climb to the platform and move the top pulley into a better position. You guys tie all the leftover lumber to the trailer and pull it up. I will lay it out on the platform. Tomorrow we will start on the walls. We have to have walls if we're going to sleep up there." "And a roof," said Jackie. "I think I can get us a camouflage tarp to use as a roof." Everyone nodded and smiled, for the secret hideout promised the best summer ever. All the Braves were feeling a strong sense of friendship and camaraderie. They all climbed up the last pallet that remained leaning up against the back of the shed and into the maple tree. Billy stayed behind. "I have to do one last check to make sure we did not forget anything. I will see you guys tomorrow at the same time." The rustling leaves of the maple tree quieted as the gang left the tree one at a time. Billy scanned the yard for anything that might give them away. It all looked good. The day was warm and the breeze was light.
The roof of the police tent rippled. He turned and looked around. There was no one anywhere in sight. He backed up until his hand touched the tent. He felt the opening slit. He ducked underneath the yellow tape and slipped into the tent. Everything was the same as before, except some of the rotten boards were piled on the side. More of the skeleton was exposed. Billy could see the skull. The bottom jaw was at an odd angle to the top jaw. It was missing front teeth. Billy stared. He didn't think he was scared. He didn't feel scared. It was, after all, just a very old bunch of bones. He knelt on one knee to get a closer look. As soon as his knee settled into the soft earth, he saw the bottom jawbone teeter and fall into the mouth of the skull. Billy startled and jumped back, caught his feet on the pile of casket boards, and fell against the wall of the tent. The entire tent shimmied. He scrambled to his feet. Immediately, he recognized what had happened. The university people had balanced the jawbone, and when he disturbed the ground, it simply fell. He looked down and noticed he had kicked a lot of earth around when he fell. He carefully got down on his knees. He reached for the jawbone that had settled in the soft earth and quickly withdrew his hand. He kept thinking that a person used to eat food with his jaw. Quickly grabbing the jawbone, he rebalanced it on the skull and brushed the dry earth, so it was as smooth as when he had entered. He continued as he backed out, so no one would notice he had ever been inside the tent. Both the tent and the ancient skeleton would be gone on Monday, and he would not miss it. Billy opened the door to the shed. The tarp that the Braves had hidden under was spread across the middle of the floor. He picked it up and rolled it into a tube and tied it with a piece of string left on the workbench. It was not big enough to make a roof for the hideout, but it was good for hiding under if the situation presented itself again. He looked at the wall opposite the bench. There was a line of hooks with all sorts of little items dangling. There were bits of baling wire, a couple of old baseball caps, some leather straps, and bits of hose long since rotten. Billy walked over and attempted to hang the rolled-up tarp from one of the hooks. The hook held for a few seconds, and then it gave way. A heavy metal flat bar about a meter long clanged to the floor, followed by the tarp. The rolled-up tarp, along with the metal bar, had exceeded the weight the rusty hook could hold. Billy leaned down to pick everything up when he noticed a slot in the floor a couple of centimeters from the wall. It was about 2 centimeters wide and 50 long. It ran parallel to the wall. It was nearly invisible from the other side of the room due to the board nailed in front of it. Billy dropped the tarp. He thought of the hollow sound beneath the shed floor. He looked closer at the flat metal bar. It was pointed at one end. The slot, the flat metal bar, the hollow floor. Like pieces of a puzzle, they all came together in his mind, and Billy fitted the bar into the slot. The hole beneath must have been designed to allow the bar to slip perfectly into whatever was down below. Billy looked at the bar protruding from the floor at an angle, the flat side toward the wall. He did to the bar what it looked like the configuration was designed to do. He grabbed onto it and pulled like you would a lever. It moved very slowly. Billy pulled harder until the bar was just past upright. And then he did not need to pull any more. The bar traveled the rest of the way on its own. There was a rumbling, then a twang, as if something heavy had pulled something taut. There was a moment of silence, a creak of boards, a scream of metal, and finally A bang! A section of the floor opened behind him. It was supported by a set of rusty spring hinges attached from below. They had been compressed for a long time. Billy felt they had screamed with joy to finally be set free. The section of the floor that opened was not a perfect rectangle. The edges were just the boards sticking out in the pattern that the builder had placed them. This left no indication of a trapdoor in the floor because it looked like a normal floor. Now it was gaping open in the dust-filled room. Billy crept to the edge and peeked down. He could barely make out the bottom. He could see portions of what appeared to be an old ladder. There was no way down, and if you happened to fall down the hole, there would be no way up. He needed a proper ladder. His dad had ladders, but they were always in use. He would have to build one. That was not a big job, if you had the right materials. His mind raced. He had a million questions that could only be answered if he could get down there and explore. Billy felt a shiver run up and down his spine. The secrets of the old Cooper place were revealing themselves a little at a time. This crazy tunnel, he was now sure, was the secret way into the cellar of the house. Why had it been bricked up? The belt buckle suggested it also went somewhere else, somewhere in the middle of the freeway median. Maybe it even went further. There were a lot of questions that Billy had no answers to. He thought about sharing his discoveries with the gang. His face scrunched up. He did not want to share anything, at least until he had answers to a few questions. This was his discovery. It was his to do with what he pleased. He would tell no one. It would remain his secret for as long as he could keep it. Billy, ever the practical one, grabbed a piece of string off the workbench and tied an old bolt to one end and dangled it down the hole in the floor until it touched the ground. He tied a knot in the string at the floor level and pulled it up. The hole was a little over 7 feet down. He would have to build his ladder longer so that it would sit at an angle. An 8-foot ladder would barely fit in the shed and would be very obvious. Billy started designing one in his head that would fold in half. It could fit discreetly under the workbench when not in use. He would unfold it, open the trapdoor, drop the ladder down, explore, climb up the ladder, put it away, and finally close the trapdoor. Close the trapdoor. He suddenly realized he did not know how to close the door in the floor. His secret would be very short-lived if he could not close it. He pushed on the upright trapdoor. Old springs creaked and squeaked on either side of the door at its base. He pushed, and the door slowly began to close. As it got closer to the floor and the springs became more compressed, it became harder and harder to close. Finally, Billy was standing on the closed trap door. He started to step off and realized that whatever held the door in place was not working. The door was primed to spring open the moment his weight came off. He jumped up and down in hopes that he might jar whatever needed jarring and the lock would click into place. He looked at the lever still protruding from the floor. Maybe he had to pull the lever back in place before he tried to shut it. He walked towards the hinges of the trap door and turned. He did not want it to bang like the last time. He slowly eased it up until he could grab the edge and caught it in his hands. It was now fully open again. Billy walked over to the lever and pushed it back to its original position. It required all his strength. There were creaking and banging sounds before it finally reached the starting position. He gingerly took his hand away, and the lever stayed in place. He started to close the trap door again, but this time he heard a resounding click as it finally settled. The door was a floor again. There was nothing to indicate that there was ever a trap door there, except the boards that were part of the trap door were now cleaner than the rest of the floor. The dirt had fallen off when it was upright. Billy quickly brushed the dirt around until it was evenly distributed again. Then he picked up the tarp, tossed it on the bench, and left the shed. This tunnel would remain secret, known to him and only him, until he learned more of the ancient secrets it was hiding.